All right, everybody, welcome on in. This is Barely Audible. I'm Zach Spears. I've got Jeff Woody and Austin Arnaud, former Iowa State greats, here on the line with us. We do this podcast, last football season, and Jeff got too busy with his schedule. I was too busy with my schedule, and Austin was too busy with his schedule this year to do it. But we bring it together from time to time. Austin, how's everything in Charlotte?
Charlotte's great. Can't complain that, you know, you guys have, Jeff especially, has seen his fair share of snow already. Zach, you're in Texas, so you enjoy this beautiful weather, but I don't miss necessarily the freezing temperatures in October. Charles,
guys, yeah. It's 52 and sunny here. So right now,
and Jeff, you
it may have snowed.
Hate all you want. I can deal with it in December.
Hey, Jeff, you've had your hands full up there. I hear a little bit of news. Iowa State may or may not have a new football coach, and that's the reason why we're together today, huh?
What?
Yeah, I can't tell.
No.
I cannot tell on Twitter. The reason that I know is because I logged onto Twitter, and someone who claimed that they're the Iowa State head football coach tweeted, and I've never seen that before in the history of the world. So I was intrigued by
Twitter,
it.
On Twitter, an Iowa State head football coach, and he is actively participating on it. It's not just like have a Twitter to have a Twitter.
Wait, what's Twitter?
What's the tweeter? Yeah, Austin, you don't do it very much anymore, huh? You just go on and favorite a few articles to read every once in a while, huh?
I just use it for news. That's all, boys.
Yeah. All right. So, Austin, the first things first, obviously, Matt Campbell, the new head football coach from Toledo. He's the new head coach at Iowa State. Austin, you're the only one of us that's ever been through a coaching change. You went through, what, two of them, three of them?
Yeah, two transitions, three different coaches, yeah, in 5 years. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I bet. Can you talk about kind of what the emotions are of that? And it's especially like when you find out about the head coach and then standing, I know you stood in Coach Rhodes' welcoming press conference. What are all those emotions and things like, and what's going through your head?
It's one of those things where, you know, it's hard to describe. You know, the first thing you have to do is determine the personality of the coach. So, which was great when I was fortunate in both of the transitions I was a part of that, you know, Coach Chizik, when he came in, you know, I was one of the first guys that he called. And then same thing with Coach Rhodes, one of the first guys that he called. So they wanted to make sure that the quarterback and you know, a leader of the team was on board. So I always had a good experience when I came. But there's always, you know, you get that influx when you have a coach come in where you have, you know, you have the walk-ons in the program, you have scholarship guys that were recruited by the other coach, obviously, which is everyone. But it just really depends on how they gel. And then the number one thing I can share with the guys that are there right now, just to have an open mind. I mean, it's going to be a 180-degree change of philosophy, probably, and just the way of doing things, and you got to learn something new. The one thing that a lot of guys that got ran off or quit, they weren't willing to accept change, and that's the number one thing these guys got to do is be willing to accept change.
Jeff, do you have any questions for him about, you know, going through a coaching transition?
What's, like, when you were talking to Coach Chizik and you were talking to Coach Rhodes when they kind of called you, what is that conversation like? Like, is it them telling you what they're going to do or them asking you what they should do?
It really depended for me. So when Coach Chiz came in, it was more of a quick high and by, you know, this is something we want to do. But with Coach Rhodes, it was quite a bit different. You know, Coach Rhodes called me, and then as soon as Coach Herman got the job, he called me too. So the guys that I, you know, obviously talking with Coach Rhodes, Coach Herman was pretty cool. And the fact that, you know, they kind of played out what we want to do, this is who we want to be, this is our identity as a program. And, you know, I didn't have that with Chizik. Chizik, believe it or not, is kind of a guy that does things on his own. So,
that's code
comforting.
That's code for Chizik's a dick.
Whatever you want to say. But I can attest to when, you know, I feel like Coach Rhodes and those guys had more of a specific plan when they came in as opposed to Chizik, but it really, like I said, going with change and being able to adjust on the fly with what they were saying and what they were doing was a lot easier for me with Rhodes' staff because I felt like there was more of an emphasis on the players as opposed to just, I'm here, this is what we're going to do. Coach Rhodes was very open when he came in. He had me, Reggie, Derek Schmidgall, Marquise Hamilton, James Smith, some of the older guys that are on that team kind of say, you know, hey, what do you guys want to do? How do you want to do it? I think that's what Coach Campbell probably has the same philosophy as well. Because you got to make sure the first thing you do when you get a head job is you got to recruit the guys that you have already before you even go out on the road recruiting. So that's number one.
Yeah.
And well, Coach he's got 33 seniors for this next year.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's definitely wasted no time getting out on the the road recruiting, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. First, I want to get everyone's favorite Coach Rhodes story real quick. Mine is after you and I forget what year it was, but they put me in the game. I got to play the final series, and on like second last or the last play of the game, I pancaked some nose guard or something from you and I, and I got like really hyped up on film, and I was all pumped up celebrating. We won the game by blowout, and I had no reason to be celebrating, but all the other linemen came out and like grabbed me and like picked me up, and it seemed like they were going to put me on their shoulders. Well, later the next day on Sunday, I'd gotten my fair share of grief in the film about acting like such an idiot, for lack of a better term, acting like an idiot in such a blowout game. But Coach Rhodes came up to me. We were walking over for our Sunday walkthrough the next day, and he told me he was proud of me, but also that I reminded him of radio because the team reacted in such a way that they almost as if they felt so sorry for me, and he thought they were going to parade me around on their shoulders. So for a while, him and Coach Blyle and Yancey McKnight called me radio for a while. That's my favorite Coach Rhodes story. There's a ton of them, obviously, and he meant it all in a good way, too. We had a good laugh for a few weeks on that. Jeff, what's your favorite Coach Rhodes story?
I think my favorite one is my true freshman year, so the year that I was redshirting. That was 2009, yeah, 2009, and that was one of the really cold winters. Uh-huh. It was my first spring. Hell, excuse me, whatever. It was October, so it was my first fall. I was right at first time. It was my first fall, and it started to get cold, and it was like 40, 45 degrees. And Dion Broomfield, who's from Tampa, is he Tampa or Orlando? Anyway, he's from Florida.
He's from Tampa area.
So he's from Florida, and he comes up, and he comes out of practice. He's wearing like two thermals, a stocking cap, tights. He's wearing sweatpants over his shorts, and it's like 45 degrees. And it's not cold yet. Like all the Iowa guys are wearing like t-shirts and shorts, and they're like, all right, this is cool, man. And at the end of practice, it was a good practice, and Coach was in a good mood. And he goes, Dion, you cold? And Dion goes, yes, sir. And he goes, Dion, you ain't seen shit yet.
It's true. It's very true. What about you, Austin?
I've got a couple, and I might go on for a while because we had some good times. My first one, I've got two. So my first one is when my senior year, we beat Texas at Texas. I even text Coach Rhodes after the game the other day. In college, I was not a coffee guy quite yet, but we had so many 11 o'clock kicks that senior year because we were on TV a lot that, we were up early. So I remember we were at Texas. We were up at like 6 or 5 or something like that. And we were eating breakfast at like 7. And I just remember walking up and grabbing coffee with Coach Rhodes, and, you know, I'm over there putting a million creams and a million sugars in my coffee, and Coach Rhodes is taking, you know, obviously his coffee's black. He looks at me, he says, you drink coffee? I go, I think this is my first time today as far as like a whole cup. He's like, I'm tired, Coach. He goes, okay, but, you know, you're fine. He looks at me and says, all that cream and sugar. He goes, just wait, you're going to have black coffee. So, I mean, now every day I'm a disciple of black coffee. And I don't think it's because of Coach Rhodes, but I just think it's one of those things. He's like, you just wait. You're going to get tired of putting cream and sugar in that thing all the time.
He's a wise man.
So that was funny for me. And then, what's that?
He's a wise man. He knew that before it even happened.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's a smart guy. But then also, you know, when and I think, Woody, were you there for this when we beat him over in Lincoln, right?
Since I was a redshirt, I only got to travel to one game.
Oh, that's right.
And
so,
it took me
I was there. I was there. We had, like, the whole team had swine flu.
Oh, yeah, that was right.
Yeah.
But we went over there, and it was awesome for, you know, we had a backup quarterback, and A-Rob was out, and Ben Lamacq, our starting guard, was out, and we get a win over there. I think that was a win that really defined Coach Rhodes' coaching career at Iowa State and got us started in the right foot because, you know, obviously, backs against the wall, only us. And then, you know, we come out there. Obviously, it was not a pretty game, but turned them over 8 or 9 times. Jerome Tiller throws the one touchdown to Jake Williams. We win the game. But obviously, that locker room, and everyone knows this, but that locker room scene was YouTube gold right after.
Yep. Yep.
So it was pretty cool to be a part of that, where he was, you know, and we'd seen Coach Rhodes fired up before, but not like that, you know. It was one of those things that, like, we knew this guy was very fired and he cared a lot about this program. But in that instance right there, it was like, man, this guy loves Iowa State, loves the state of Iowa, loves coming over here and beating a team who has a great history. And it was just one of those moments you look back on and it's like, man, I was also a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the cool thing about, like, things like that and, like, the different moments in the locker room on track field or, like, in the press conferences, I think back to my senior year, the Texas game when we got jobbed, just absolutely jobbed. And Rhodes went to the press conference, and he was like, you can't just go and put your arm around a kid and tell him that it's okay. Like, all of
it's not going to be okay.
That's all original. Like, he doesn't pre-rehearse that stuff and just go, okay, well, I'm going to go do this thing. It's like, that reminds me. The emotion that he's got is, like, what just flows out of him.
Exactly. And that reminds me of one more story. Sorry, I'm going on here, Buzz. But I remember we shot the commercial my senior year. There was the Iowa State football commercial. Maybe it was my junior year, but Coach Rhodes, like, was, you know, that he gives, like, a locker room speech at this commercial, and we're all rah-rah. We probably took about 8 or 9 takes. Every single conversation was different. And this talks about what you were saying, Jeff. It was like, you know, not manufactured. Every single one was different. And it sounded like it came from the heart. So, you know, you just knew that guy was very passionate about what he was doing, cared a lot about us as kids, and, you know, great ambassador for Iowa State football.
Yeah, and one thing I will say about Coach Rhodes before we move on, because I know a lot of people, you know, probably enjoy the stuff but want to know our thoughts on the new staff stuff. But that initial staff Rhodes had when we all first got there was a hell of a staff. I mean, yeah, I just got a notification. We're recording this on Saturday. Chris Ash, our old defensive backs coach, is now the head coach at Rutgers. So that puts Tom Herman as the head coach at the University of Houston, arguably one of the best teams in college football. Yancey is now widely regarded as the best strength coach in college football. Coach Chris Ash is widely regarded as one of the best defensive coordinators in the last 5 years of college football and now is a head coach. Kenneth Pope, your running backs coach, Jeff Woody, is coached he's coached everybody in college football. He played at OU.
Let me give you this. All you got to say. The list of Coach Pope. Eric Dickerson, Craig James, LaDainian Tomlinson. He was the special teams returns coach for Barry Sanders. He coached at Texas A&M when they were TCF bowl games. So, like, yeah, Coach Pope coached absolutely everybody, anyone who's everyone that played running back in the past 20 years.
Yeah, and we could go on and on about the staff. And also Nick Cayley, who was a graduate assistant on that, he coached at Eastern Illinois 2 years ago. He was regarded as one of the top FCS recruiters in college football. Now he's an assistant on Bill Belichick's staff in New England. So, I mean, Coach Rhodes put together a hell of a football staff for us to learn from.
And you got Wally Burnham, who is the defense coordinator, who just announced his retirement, that he was done coaching at age 74, I think, 73. And Wally was a linebackers coach for Derrick Brooks at Florida State. So
you got a shout-out in his Hall of Fame speech.
You talk about pedigree.
Yeah. Incredible.
That's just insane. And Bill Blyle is, what, the OC at Rhode Island?
Yep. So, I mean,
we didn't even talk about Coach Wells, Matt Wells is going to get a new head job soon somewhere, very big, and Luke's going to follow him, and Luke Wells is on our staff as well.
I mean, we could go on about guys on the staff. That's just some of the highlights of it, and I couldn't, you know, in my profession, in analysts and hosts and stuff, I couldn't thank Coach Rhodes enough because I got to learn from, you know, what seems to be some of the best young talent and coaching and football minds in the business, and picked up a lot from them. So many thanks to Coach Rhodes for, you know, believing in my dreams and keeping me around when he had no reason to. Let's move on to the staff here. Guys, Jeff, the hire initially, we've heard a lot of your thoughts, obviously, as you have radio shows and columns and stuff, but quickly recap your thoughts on the hiring process. When you first heard the name and then when you first saw it was officially done, what popped into your mind?
Well, I really like the hire for the reasons that Pollard went out and sought after Sage and Ben Brun's opinion on what needs to happen. And I guess that he didn't go after me and Arnaud, but hey, I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter.
Next hire.
I wish you, whatever. It's all right.
Yeah, I'm not bitter. But anyway, so when you talk to Bruns and Sage, those dudes are really smart, and they said the same things that we would have said. If you have to get a guy who's an offensive guy to keep up in the Big 12, who knows how to run the ball philosophically, and who's also been a head coach before, because the last three coaches that we've had have all been coordinators, and this is their first head coaching spot. So getting an idea of what to do and how to be the head man and how to determine your own recruiting class and where to distribute guys to go recruit and how to make sure everything runs like a tight ship. Well, it takes a little bit to get that on track of what exactly you want and what works for you. And the fact that you have a guy who's I know nothing about his personality. And press conferences are one thing. And apparently, I mean, I trust Chris Williams' opinion on this and Andrew Downs. They both said that they were completely bought into what he was saying in the press conference. But again, it's a press conference.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about him personally, but from just like the black and white information that you could put on a resume, he's been a head coach for a successful program, and he has won literally everywhere he's been.
Yeah.
And then you have his, by position, he's an offensive line coach. So he played defensive end when he was in college, and he was an offensive line coach, which got promoted to offensive coordinator. And then he's an offensive coordinator. He was an offensive coordinator turned head coach. So all the like all the boxes of what you want, plus the fact that he's 36 and he is an aggressive recruiter, all the black and white information looks really, really good. And now I'm really interested to see, you know, when you get to talk to him or when you get to listen to a press conference, when I get to do an interview, like what is he going to be like? And when I get to talk to his players and when I get to talk to his former players, like what is that like? Because that's the more important part. And I think the things that I, you know, obviously that you have to wait and see on are what is the staff that he hires. But in the initial response to the hire is, I think it's every single box that you could possibly check that would be a good fit at Iowa State.
Austin, your initial thoughts when you started to hear the name and then heard rumblings that it was going to be a done deal?
Definitely loved it. I mean, it's a great hire for the exact same reasons that Jeff just said. Young staff, young guy, guy with football experience. But I think the one thing that I really like about it is that it's kind of a fresh landscape for him and for us. So when you think about, you know, his pedigree and being an Ohio, Michigan, that area type of guy,
mm-hmm.
something that I like because, you know, there's a lot of good high school football that's played in Ohio and Michigan collectively. So when you go out on the recruiting trail and those guys are out, I mean, I've already seen us offer two or three kids from Michigan and Ohio already, which is great to me because that's a footprint that Iowa State has never embarked upon as far as high school recruiting. You know, we do Florida, Texas, California. We get into Indiana a little bit. We get into Illinois, Missouri, Kansas. But as far as Ohio, Michigan, those areas are kind of untapped for us. And I like that we have coaches that are from that area. We have great relationships with high school coaches already. In an area that's proven, I mean, Ohio is one of the best high school football states in the country.
Yeah.
So couple that along with Michigan, where there's great football played as well. You got Michigan State. They have a ton of football schools that are rich in football history that, you know, these guys come from that. And that's only going to help us, I think. And especially with the young staff. And the one thing that, you know, is key for me is, which was, and I think Jeff attested to this on radio and on Twitter and stuff, but having somebody who's an Iowa high school coach guy, I mean, we need to have that imprint. When I was in McCarney, you know, he didn't necessarily have it when I was there, but he hired Woodley's father back in the day. Who's the elder Woodley that coaches at Grandview? What's his first name? Joe's
dad.
Is
that Brian?
No.
Brian? No, Brian's a brother.
I don't know. Yeah. Mr. Woodley,
anyway.
Coach Woodley, he hired him as just the Iowa high school relations guy, kind of the job that Mitch Moore has right now. Someone who can go into any high school in the state of Iowa, and, you know, Iowa State is known. I think with the previous staff we had, they had a good footprint in Iowa high schools, but I know from a lot of Iowa high school coaches that they were either rubbed the wrong way about how they did things or, you know, I have this kid and they didn't look at him. So I just think that it's important for there to be a high school relations guy that goes out and, you know, even if the kid isn't worth a grain of salt, you at least give them the time of day to look at them and say, okay, this is because in the future, they're going to have kids that come out there and they're like, oh, this guy didn't give me the time of day. So it's important to have someone who has an Iowa footprint as well as those guys from Michigan and Ohio where we have great recruiting ties already with this staff.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I'll piggyback off that answer too. And the two things in his press conference that I really, really liked, like specifically that I liked, were one, he said he wants to recruit hard, a 4-hour driving radius of Ames. And that's Minnesota, that's Illinois, that's Iowa, that's Missouri, Nebraska, Kansas. It's that area. And the other thing that I said, or that he said that I really, really like, which is true now that Nebraska's gone, is we are the Midwest option for the Big 12. So kids watch Texas and Baylor and stuff like that, and, like, they're not going to get looks by Texas and Baylor. But you want to play that fun style football, you want to play in this conference, you want to be on national TV every single week, you come play in the Big 12, and we're your shot. We're the ones that can do that. So you don't have to, like, sell yourself short when you're going after a kid from Illinois that doesn't want to play Big Ten football but wants to play Big 12 football. Then you get that kid who's maybe a 3-star, 4-star kid. And I mean, that's maybe a bit ambitious, but you get the kid that wants to play the Big 12 football from the Midwest, we're the shot. Because where is he going to go? Kansas?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, too, with that. To go along with that, which is great, also great, is that, you know, think about how many times, and obviously every recruiting class has kids you miss on. But I feel like with this previous staff and Rhodes and those guys, sure, they hustled, they tried to get kids. But think about how many kids we went into Florida and Texas and got scraps, and maybe those kids were okay. But
players,
Texas.
I'm not talking about you, Zach Spears.
I wasn't even scraps. I was just placed upon Rhodes from Chizik, and I
wasn't
even
okay.
Yeah, I wasn't even a whip.
I'm talking about Bo Williams, people like that, you know.
Yeah, I got
but
you.
But anyway, you know, you go into places like that, and it's kind of unknown. Well, we got to go to Florida and Texas to recruit because these are the best kids in the country. Well, the one thing and the one time that I will compliment the Iowa Hawkeyes is today, they do a great job of player development. So that's what – and also Bill Snyder at Kansas State. You get guys that potentially are walk-ons because, like, this is the Jeff Woody story 101. You get, and Jeff did a great job of developing himself. I mean, as far as that coaching staff goes, he had Coach Pope, but a lot of things Jeff did was on his own and mastering his craft in the offseason. But we need someone who's going to recruit those guys who are Midwestern kids, work hard, blue collar, who maybe aren't scholarship kids their freshman year. When you get them on campus, they work out, they work hard, and then they work themselves into a scholarship. And those are the kids that really pay off because you didn't have to do much to get them to Iowa State, and they paid dividends for you. I think we need to scour Iowa, the state, because Iowa, you guys, I mean, Jeff, you know, especially in central Iowa, there's a lot of great football being played. And
there really is.
Also,
and there's a lot of, there's a lot of kids that I think the big misses that a lot, both Iowa and Iowa State have, which is why Northwest Missouri State is so good, is you get those kids that are from not even like a 1A school, like Don Bosco or something like that. And it's a school that they play eight-man football, or they play A football, and there's like one good kid, but he plays in Class A, so there's no shot of – I mean, he's not going to get a scholarship.
Like Chad Greenway.
Yeah, like Chad Greenway. Like Dallas Clark played at – I mean, he's from Nowhereville, and you get these rural Iowa kids or a kid that maybe plays at Roosevelt North or something like that, that's just one good kid. But he's on some no-name school, no-name staff, and that's where Northwest Missouri State and those and you and I did a good job of that too. Is getting those guys that are just take a shot, just because I mean, offer them a walk-on spot, and if they take it, great, and they develop into something, great. If not, no loss. So that's the other thing that I like about hitting Iowa, hitting Illinois. I'm okay with going to Ohio, Michigan. Like, go get the kids that want to be here. And I think the one other thing about recruiting that Campbell does that I like is he's not afraid to go after four-star kids just to get spited. He's not afraid to go after the higher recruited kids because, you know, they're going to pick someone else and be like, no, I'm going to sell you on what I've got. I'm not going to sell myself short and not go after these kids.
Yeah, so my concern with where we're at right now, and you guys have kind of debunked it before I even got to talk about it, but when I first initially heard the hire, I hated it, and you guys know that because we talk all day long every day. I hated the hire. I wanted PJ Fleck, and because I wanted a young guy who could come in and be a loud presence on social media and go in and recruit. And then immediately, Jeff, you told me, you mean like the guy who's 35 years old we just hired, who not only he and all the guys that he's hired so far are widely regarded as the best mid-major program recruiters in the country, all that type of stuff. And then I went and I watched a press conference. I bought in on what he said, like you said, what Andrew Downs and Chris said, and a lot of people have said the same thing. He bought into what he said, really enjoyed it. And then what him and his staff did as soon as that press conference was over, basically go change into Iowa State polos and hit the ground running, start doing conference calls of interviews and evaluating players on film, going out and immediately offering Sean Foster, the 6'8", 300-pound offensive tackle out of Illinois that was committed to Minnesota, all those types of things. That's a big-time player, those types of guys. Because I can't remember the last time as an offensive lineman that Iowa State has gotten a guy with the actual size to come in and play right away. Not saying that he will, especially at the tackle spot. Iowa State's loaded for next year. They have three guys that can play. But think about a guy like that being able to sit back and redshirt for a year. He'll be 3'10", 3'15", by the time he's ready to play, 6'8", 6'9". That'd be a big addition for what Coach wants to do right away. And I'm also a fan of the offense he's going to bring in because I think that suits Lanning and Warren and what, you know, Iowa State needs to be on the offensive line, a big physical thing. And I didn't see all that at first, and that's my fandom getting in the way. But thanks to you guys and then just, you know, reading around and looking at the stuff that I have, I've been able to notice that. And then also, you guys were just talking about, I don't like the fact that we are – Iowa State is putting such an emphasis on recruiting right now, and through the Midwest, no one has gone to Florida. No one has gone to Texas. You guys could sit there and say all you want about how we do need to make the emphasis on this, but eventually at some point, sometime soon, as all these coaching changes are happening, people are decommitting. We need to get down into those two states and try to get some type of guys out of those areas.
I agree.
Would you not agree?
I definitely agree, and that's the one thing that we can still sell ourselves on as Iowa State is, it's not like the Iowa State 15 years ago when McCartney was here and we were practicing at the indoor. We have facilities. We have one of the best weight rooms in the country. We have an adjoining facility that you can walk in a tunnel that we didn't have, that I didn't have, certainly. You can walk in a tunnel to the field. Like, that's something that's big time. Like, NFL take it back. Like, we have a great setup. And I mean, the only thing that's obviously holding Iowa State back is, I mean, for kids that in the process is, okay, there hasn't been a ton of winning in the program, and also it's cold. But that's one thing that you can change. You can change winning in a program. You can't change the cold, but it's going to be cold everywhere in the Midwest, so I'm not worried about that. But you can't change.
We got indoor, so that's cool.
It's not like we're recruiting these kids to come to the middle of Iowa. There's nothing. We have great facilities. It's a great educational. It's a great institution as far as Iowa State University as a whole. You can get a great degree, be successful after the fact, and that's the selling point exactly right there.
Jeff. Now let's move on to the staff. Jeff, get your thoughts on it first. I love the staff. You know, great recruiters. We don't really know a lot about the defense. We saw he brought over a guy from Toledo to coach the defensive line. We don't know much. Only thing that concerns me about the staff, I love that they're all out there recruiting and that's what he's getting in guys that he trusts, but there's no experience right now on the staff for, you know, a tenured coach at the big level or any type of coaching at the big time level. Jeff, will get your thoughts first and pass it over to Arnaud, and he can kind of finish up that thought on the coaching staff.
Yeah, and it's not every coaching staff isn't always gumdrops and rainbows. So there are things that you have to look at and go, okay, now we have to wait to see how this works, because that is the thing. Like, you don't have a Wally Burnham on this staff. And I don't know if he's going to want to go get one. I don't think so, because I think he wants to have the same type of energy like Herman has, the same type deal, where he doesn't have a lot of experienced coaches outside of Coach Pope. So
yeah.
It's a lot of young guys, a lot of energetic guys, a lot of guys that are just they love recruiting and they love being around. The downside to that is if you don't have a Wally, you don't have a Coach Pope, you don't have that guy that's like that knows how to weather things in the big conference. When you get – you know, big-footed by Texas, you get big-footed by Oklahoma on recruits, what do you do? And you don't know how to respond to that. So does it mean that they're going to do it poorly? No. Does it mean they're going to do it well just because they haven't done it? No. Like, it's one of the things, like, you have to wait and see, because they don't have any of those veteran presence guys.
Yeah. Austin,
yeah.
Your thoughts.
And to kind of build off of that, the way college football works, I talked to Sage Rosenfeld probably two or three times a month, and we kind of discussed things as far as X's and O's, more X's and O's as opposed to like coaching strategies and philosophies. But there's one thing that we both agree upon. In college football, you need a solid offensive line coach, defensive line coach. You need a solid defensive coordinator and a guy who can, you know, have a semblance of calling plays. Otherwise, you go out and get sales guys. You go out and get guys that recruit. Go into somebody's home and talk, look at their parents face to face and say, hey, we want your kid to come to our school. We're going to take care of them. This is how we're going to do it, ABC. So you really only, you need to be strong in the trenches. And that's the place that Iowa State, you know, sometimes it's been hard for us to compete because, as we all know, the defensive line spot is their hardest spot in the world to recruit at. Even in the NFL, it's hard to get good defensive linemen. So I think it all starts up front, and that's what kind of alluding to what you said, Zach, when they went out and offered that kid the offensive lineman first thing. That's the one thing that I loved about it. Another thing I loved about Coach Campbell is, obviously with the footprint, is having, you know, he comes out and says, I don't want to be like Baylor or TCU. I want to be like Kansas. I want to be like Bill Snyder at Kansas State and build my program that way. So that's something that we need to touch upon too. Ball control, take care of the football, play great on defense. But that kind of comes back into the fold is you have a good defensive line coach, you have a good offensive line coach, you recruit the trenches first, and that's somewhere in the Midwest you have those big, big, burly kids who can come in and get that size and not necessarily the speed, but the size we need to compete in the Big 12. So you start in the trenches and work your way out, but you need a lot of salesmen on that staff to go recruit in these kids' high school selves.
Austin, where do you want to see them go defensively on this football team moving forward? And then, Jeff, I want to ask you who you think should be the defensive coordinator and what names you think we should go after. Austin?
Well, to be honest with you, there's not really a name that I can kind of put my hand on right now. It's because there's so much turnover right now with what's going on, and there's a lot of small, you know, small school defensive coordinators that I'm not even aware of that he probably knows to call on. But I want to have someone where it's going to be a physical brand of football, and in the Big 12 especially, for a program like us, like we need to bring the physicality to these teams that are spread finesse type teams. That's why we got to have a great front seven. So you want to have obviously great defensive line, but even more so. I would like to see us go after a defensive coordinator who believes in playing, you know, kind of that quarters, you know, cover four, man-type coverage on the back end, because a lot of these teams are going to run verticals and deep routes. We got to have guys that can run with step for step. So I like a guy that comes in and recruits bigger corners, you know, your 6 foot, 6 foot one, 6 foot two type corners who can come in and make up for what they lack in speed and length, because, I mean, you guys know what's the hardest thing to defend in the Big 12. It's that first, you know, a sudden change, first and 10 deep ball from Texas Tech, Cliff Kingsbury, and Art Browse at Baylor. They just want to chunk it deep, and that's where they have a lot of their success at, is going up top on early downs, and we got to be expecting you're ready for that. So that's something that I'm concerned about as far as hiring a defensive coordinator. Somebody who's going to be aggressive, but in the same sense, not be aggressive and dumb and have guys left off on the island where, you know, on early downs taking advantage of because they're getting up big plays.
What about you, Jeff?
Shane Burnham.
Is there any possibility to that though?
I don't know.
Would Shane return? They built a nice home in NIA, but I don't know.
What?
Would Shane return, Jeff, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's, if he gets a coordinator spot, he's not going to come back to be a position coach. I wouldn't be.
Right.
I mean, it kind of depends on what his mesh with the, like, does he, if he sees that he could work with Campbell and he sees that he could work with those dudes, then he potentially could. But I would love to see Shane, because you guys can attest to this. Like, you couldn't find a guy in the locker room that doesn't like Shane Burnham. Couldn't find one. And he's a guy that you said you want to recruit Texas and Florida. There's your guy. He is a Florida recruiter. Like, that's his main spot.
And he played in the SEC at South Carolina.
Right. So, Shane, I would love to see Shane Burnham as the defensive coordinator. I don't know what position you coach. The dude could coach anything. But
linebacker probably played linebacker.
They've already got a linebackers coach.
Never mind.
But the thing is, you want an aggressive physical brain of defense. Shane is, that's his biggest thing. He would want guys to get in like a fist fight if they weren't being physical enough. Like, he wants physical ass dudes. So I would love to see Shane, and if it's not Shane, because you don't want to retain guys from the staff, it would be weird and it would be some kind of holdover, whatever. But if you don't want to get Shane, get a guy like Shane. Get a guy that can recruit Texas, recruit Florida, but also runs an aggressive style physical defense like Austin was saying. And get a guy, you have to be able to get dudes that can play enough man to be serviceable, because you can't always drop into a zone. Otherwise,
right.
I think this is where Texas Tech really makes their money, as opposed to, I mean, Baylor is 100% over the top. TCU is 100% over the top. Where Texas Tech makes their money is they send two guys deep and they send three guys underneath. And because if you're playing a deep zone to protect those two deep balls, then Pat Mahomes and Cliff Kingsbury is going to design plays that you just find some little soft zone that there's like no one within 13 yards of that guy because they're all playing so deep. So you have to be able to get dudes that can play man in the back end, whether it's linebackers on linebackers on tight ends, running back, or secondary on wideouts. You have to get dudes that can play man, and you also have to get guys on defensive line that can get enough pressure that Jarrett Stidham isn't able to be comfortable, because that's where you get a TCU, that's where you get a Baylor, that's where you get a Texas Tech off rhythm, or out of their offense, is if you get them off rhythm. Like, the quarterback can't just sit back and be comfortable and just huck it whenever he wants to. If he thinks that he's going to get hurt and the passes start becoming offline, then that run after catch doesn't happen. That that deep 70-yard bomb doesn't happen because he can't get comfortable enough to throw it.
Right, and that's one thing that we got to emphasize is tackling well. That's something that Coach Rhodes always
says. Yes, you have to.
Job for the time. We got to be able to tackle in space against spread teams.
Because that's how Baylor and TCU and OU and them, they turn those 7-yard slant routes or those 3-yard bubble routes into 70-yard plays when you don't make the tackle. That's what it's based upon. They're out-athleting your one guy that you have matched up on them.
Correct.
All right. So last question here. We'll finish up with this. Austin, what are you thinking for next year, for the season, and how do you think this – I mean, it's a disadvantage for this recruiting class. Obviously, they're working hard, but they're getting a very late start on this recruiting class. What do you think to see out of this football team?
Well, the one thing that helps that is that, you know, the cupboard's certainly not bare at Iowa State. We have players. You know, we got Lanning. We've got Alan Lazard. DeVario Montgomery comes back. We've got a lot of guys.
DeVario's gone.
Obviously, oh, he is? Okay.
DeVario's gone.
Is DeMond Tucker coming back? Yeah, right?
Yep. Just
so we've got guys on defense that can make plays. So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, the cupboard's not bare. We have guys that are there. But as far as you said with the recruiting process, yeah, it may be a little bit tougher as far as in getting a late start. But I have full confidence in these guys that they're going to put together, you know, a solid group of 25 to 30 guys that are going to come in and want to compete. So I'm not worried about the recruiting aspect at all because I think a lot of the guys that – we saw this year, we're going to see again. So, and it's just up to those guys in the offseason whether, you know, let's take this thing 100% wholeheartedly. You know, we got to make a change. There's going to be a lot of new things coming at you, but how do you adapt to change? That's the one thing I talked about at the start of this podcast is that how do you adapt to change? How can you, you know, fundamentally speaking, put in what they're saying and make that transition onto the field in a short amount of time? That's what's going to determine how good this coaching staff really is.
And you, Woody?
I think the expectation should be that you go bowling next year, and mm-hmm. I think that the schedule does not prohibit that, because obviously your 3 non-conference games, yes, they're tough games, but they're all completely winnable. Kansas State, West Virginia, all completely winnable. Texas, I don't think is going to be that good next year if they keep Charlie. That's definitely winnable. I don't ever count Oklahoma State as they're going to beat us. Game. These games are all extremely winnable. To say what you want about the schedule, there is a good chance to win almost every game that you play in, and you get Baylor at home next year. So all these things lead to the fact that they should be able to get 6 wins. And the good news for recruiting is they've only got 16 scholarships that they can offer to this class. So they don't have to go out and try and fill 25 guys just to fill 25 guys. So they have 33 seniors next year. They have time. That's why you're going to see a lot of 2017. They're seeing a ton of 2017 offers as opposed to 2016 offers because the 2017, that class is huge because of all the JUCO guys they went and got, like DeMond and like Justin Thomas and like those Wilt. I can't remember if Wilt or Peavy is going to be the senior. But anyway, because all those guys are going to be seniors next year, they don't have a lot to go off of this year. Which means when they're going out and recruiting, they can be, despite the fact that they're short time, they can be selective in who they go after. Those big kids from Illinois, that big kid from Ohio, and that's another selling point. And be like, we've only got 16, we're giving one to you. Like, that's how bad we want you here. And so, like AA was saying, there's plenty of talent back. You have 8 of 11 starters on defense returning. You have most of the rotational guys on defense returning. You have all of your primary skill guys except Bundridge that come back. And your offensive line, you have both tackles. The only area of concern that I can see, the only area of concern as far as what we have or what we're recruiting is interior offensive line. Everywhere else is fine. Like, in my mind, everywhere else is fine. And depth is even pretty good everywhere else. Just interior offensive line because you graduate Amoyle, Tyese, Locke. Burton's always hurt. And Scoggins comes back, but Scoggins is little. And do you have guys that can play the interior of that line to deal with Tapper and Billings are gone next year, but can you deal with Tapper? Can you deal with Billings? Because they're going to have – I mean, those southern schools are going to have dudes that are interior defensive linemen. You have to have guys that can handle them. So I think the only area of concern that I have is are they going to get JUCO guys? They think the guys that are there are going to be able to do it. So – that's my one area of concern, but outside of that, I really like this team coming back. If they buy in, there is no reason they shouldn't be in a bowl game next year.
Yeah. I just really quick, I was very let down with the outcome of this year. I thought, you know, especially during the middle part, those tough games, those tough opponents we played, we had shots to win, and we played them really well. And at the end of the year, we only had 3 wins. So I was very disappointed with the underachieving of this year's football team. I'm looking forward to next year because I want to see – obviously, we don't know much about the defense. We talked about that. But I want to see how Lanning, Warren, maybe get more of a tight end involved in this system with Coach Campbell on offense. And I think we have a lot of the good pieces that can do some early
and
success
you
in his system.
You say something about tight end. There's a kid that they're really high on who is redshirting this year. His name is Scotty Schaffner. You watch. Schaffner is going to be a big part of this offense next year. Yeah, he is a real – I mean, he's a big athletic dude. He reminds me when you look at him like of Hollywood as far as tall, long, lean, athletic. He's a lot like old Colin Franklin.
Yeah.
Man, don't be giving him those praises. Holy cow, that guy had
here. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys taking time out of your Saturday. We appreciate it. This is on CycloneFanatic.com. Thanks to Chris and everybody over there for letting us use the home base, the best website in all of college, best website in all of Iowa State athletic stuff. So thanks to Chris and CycloneFanatic.com. Guys, appreciate it. Austin, I'll see you in a few weeks at the University of North Carolina. Woody, stay warm, guys. Peace.